VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 526, recorded on January 22nd, 2019.
And welcome to the 526th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 359th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So we're finally on schedule again. All the brouhaha of my move finally behind me, and we're actually doing news again after talking about our favorite games of 2019.
2018.
And it's odd because right now the Resident Evil 2 reviews have been coming out and it has been universally raved about. Everybody loves it. Even though it's not coming out until the 25th. But I know that just whet TJ's appetite a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. This is one of the first games in a pretty long time that once I saw the first trailer, I had a good feeling about it, and so I sort of went out of my way to not watch too much further. I've seen maybe a couple, like, one-minute-long clips here and there. I haven't watched any of those super long 48-minute reveals of anything or, like, played the demo or anything.
Well, you know, here's the thing, though. A lot of news items have also noted that this wasn't going to be Resident Evil 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me think, you know what this game reminds me of most right now? Dead Space. The first Dead Space.
For sure.
You know, and I'm wondering if they decide, you know, we should make this a Resident Evil game because there's a lot of negative baggage on Dead Space right now. So let's just slap the Resident Evil 2 name on it with the characters and work from there. Which is fine, you know. I mean, that's how Super Mario Bros. 2 came about. So not the Lost Levels, the one that we had that was adapted from a different game.
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, like, Resident Evil 4 was already Dead Space-y in the way that they broke that was where they finally broke the fixed camera angles and put it right behind Leon. And so it's sort of like if you took all of the things that, like, everybody loved about the Resident Evil 2 environment and context and sort of put that style of Resident Evil 4 and or Dead Space behind it, and yeah, of course it's awesome.
Here's the other thing. You know that Capcom really thinks highly of the game because you'll notice that the embargo date for reviews is a couple of days before the actual release.
Mm-hmm. And man, like, I'm the only thing that I've seen people, like, the biggest complaint I've seen people say about it is that it takes too much from the original story, which the original Resident Evil stories were super schlocky and
what? Pretty... You mean a little person in a Napoleon outfit as being the big villain in number 4 wasn't schlocky?
Mm-hmm. And so it's actually nice to me to hear that it's not like it's going to be good, but it's also just going to be a little bit like me smirking and being like, come on.
It also makes me wonder what Resident Evil 8 is going to be.
Yeah, like, they started to set it up with some of the DLC in Resident Evil 7. You saw Chris return. Spoilers, I'm sorry.
Chris Redfield and Ada Wong, and of course, Mr. Kennedy.
And so we have an idea of where they wanted to go, but there's really not much about it yet. You know, quite frankly, I wouldn't mind if Capcom was just like, let's HD remake all of the original games all the way up to Code Veronica. Let's do it.
No, I think they're probably going to move on to 8, you know, because it's okay to move back in time and do this, but, you know, I think they really just want to whet people's appetites for number 8. And, you know, keep in mind, this is probably Resident Evil 2 is probably a tech demo for what 8 is going to be.
I think they'll keep doing it as long as it keeps making them money, which, by all accounts, Resident Evil 2 is about to make them money hand over foot.
I think they might even just split it, you know. Okay, we're going to release RE3 Remastered, but we're also going to have RE8 coming out soon.
Because people would love to jump into that RE3 story with Nemesis. Can you imagine taking the graphics that they have in Resident Evil 2 Remake and giving them to a giant worm-handed man with a rocket launcher chasing you around?
I'm just thinking about the little person in the Napoleon outfit right now. On the other hand, it's Tuesday, therefore another Civ 6 Gathering Storm video came out, and this time it was Suleiman from the Ottomans. And what is his big deal? Well, he loves to conquer.
Well,
and his big
do,
thing is that Janissaries normally take a population out of your cities when you create them, but if you build them in a city that's been conquered, they don't take the population. And conquered cities join you fairly quickly. They don't have any real rebellion, and you know, so they also gain the special bonuses for being conquered cities and all that stuff. So basically, the Ottomans are encouraging people to just, you know, conquer other cities. You know, they're going for the domination victory.
Sure. Had they gone hardcore on a military side for a new one in Gathering Storm yet?
Well, no, I mean, the Ottomans also have the best siege weapons as well. They can take down city walls pretty quickly, too.
I think the Raven King is the military civ for this one, because I remember him having something about mercenaries being able to recruit units quickly.
Yeah, but the Ottoman is basically, his entire deal is, yeah, I'm going to take your cities and there's nothing you can do about it, and they're going to love being with me.
Rapid expansion through force.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have the same flashiness of the other new civs, like, oh, we start in water. Oh, we, you know, we get gold and food from the tundras, you know, and all that stuff. But
they do have a unique ability to situate or station a governor.
Oh, yeah, they have the Grand Vizier. City. Yeah, and they can situate him in another person's city.
Mm-hmm. And that can affect their diplomacy.
Yeah. I mean, they're all about what's yours is mine now. You know, like I said, they're not as flashy. They don't have the visually, you know, snazzy stuff, but they are kind of potent if you're looking for that domination victory.
They are a favorite from the past previous games. Yeah. I think at least in Civ 4.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people wondered where the heck are the Ottomans were they with the Persians? Was Suleiman with the Persians before?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, no, he wasn't with the Arabs, was he?
I think no.
Anyway, but the thing is, Suleiman was in previous games, you know.
His name is familiar to me. Like
Suleiman is the one who Richard the Lionhearted went to war against in the Crusades. He's also somebody
that's
you meet
Saladin.
In Assassin's Creed.
That was Saladin.
It's same thing, different pronunciation. Suleiman,
no,
Saladin.
Different guys.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well, oh yeah. Suleiman is the one you meet in The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Those sneaky, sneaky Ottomans. One day they're propping up your feet in your favorite chair, and the next day they're taking over.
The thing is that the Ottomans, in real life, they had the biggest empire for a very long time, at controlling the Byzantine Empire. They were, you know, they controlled the Holy Roman Empire. And then, you know, World War I came and plop, they were gone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm oversimplifying it, but they when the Ottoman Empire went away, that was the last major empire. You know, something that could be called an empire, like the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So, so the Ottomans are coming, and, you know, it's coming out on February 19th, I think, Gathering Storm, or 16th. So yeah, just 2 more weeks until we have the Gathering Storm coming out.
Man, there's a lot coming out at the start of this year that everybody is super excited about. So Gathering Storm, of course, Resident Evil 2, of course, and then everybody's about to lose their minds over Kingdom Hearts 3 after 10 years.
I spoke to Paul about this, and he said he has not watched one single video. He has deliberately avoided everything, even more than you would Resident Evil 2.
Yeah. When you know something is going to be good, why spoil yourself on it? He doesn't even know that
Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be good. He just doesn't want anything spoiled.
For sure.
I don't blame him. That's a good strategy to enjoy your long-awaited game.
Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be good, because if it's not good, then a million fans are going to march on Square Enix and burn it to the ground.
And not Disney. I mean, there are a lot of characters that I've seen in the videos that surprised me. I mean, I knew I was going to see Elsa and all that stuff, but I was not expecting to see a live-action Jack Sparrow, for one.
Yeah, that's kind of an odd one.
There were some that I was not expecting. That were from the older stuff. It's just weird. Oh, you know, I have a confession to make, though. The new DuckTales series, I'm not feeling it. I'm so enamored of the original one from the early 90s. It's just the new DuckTales just seems so pedestrian, you know?
Hmm. It's got a pretty good upbeat sense of humor about it,
The sense of humor is kind of rote to me. It's like every other sense of humor. I mean, the original series had a way of making the normal look ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like Webby and the stupid tuning fork in the opening series, in the opening five-parter. You remember using a tuning fork to create an earthquake? Mm-hmm. It was so stupid, it was funny. I don't know. Giving all Huey, Dewey, and Louie and Webby Gale their own separate personalities, I think was a mistake. For some reason, they just don't click on, you know, unless they're unrecognizable in which one is Huey, which one is Dewey, and which one is Louie.
I like that they're separate people because it's something
it's
I like
boring.
It.
Oh, Louie's the one.
Really?
Slacker.
Making it more diverse and interesting. Whatever, Jonah.
It's all these stereotypes.
Really? Yeah. What stereotype?
The personalities. Oh, one is the genius, one is the suck-up, one is the laid-back guy who doesn't give a shit.
Well, I mean, it's a cartoon made for children.
No, it's a cartoon made for millennials.
None of them are geniuses. I don't know which one you think is a genius, but none of them are geniuses.
I just mean they act smart. You know, it's just, I get it. I'd rather not have stock personalities planted onto them. Anyways, we're getting far away from that, so what have you been playing, Scott?
More Ni no Kuni 2.
How far are you now into it?
I think I'm at least 3/4 into it, definitely. I think there's only like 9 chapters, and I'm on chapter 8, so pretty close. I've done a lot of the side stuff, and there's just a lot of side stuff to do, so there's just a lot of content to explore and enjoy, and I finally got an airship, so I'm exploring the world fully now, getting all to the little tainted monsters and to the hidden chests, and there's dimension doors I have to go and explore as well, so there's a lot to do in this game.
You still there, John? Oh, I think we lost Jonah.
No, you didn't.
Oh.
No, I'm just listening. I'm waiting for you to respond, TJ.
I didn't have anything to say on this one. I remember you saying that it was similar to Suikoden and some other RPG, and it really sort of caught my attention when you said that. I've been going back through older games that I didn't get to at the time, and so that might be one that I put on my list. I don't know yet.
Did you ever play the first Ni no Kuni? TJ?
I didn't.
Okay. I remember when we went to E3 2 years ago, it was Ni no Kuni 2 and Dragon Ball FighterZ. By the way, speaking of which, did you see the new thing they posted for the upcoming, what they think is going to be a Dragon Ball Z action RPG? And they showed this sketch, and it was actually supposed to be a 3D rendering, and it looked like a cartoon, and you couldn't tell it's 3D rendered.
That's cool.
I guess what do you think of the concept of a Dragon Ball Z action RPG?
I think that Dragon Ball Xenoverse already exists, and that's kind of what that is. I hope it's better than that. Because as much as I know people love Xenoverse, I know they do, and there's a lot to like about it. It just feels a bit too, like basically you create a character and that character doesn't make much. I don't feel like you have much agency in that world. The world just kind of happens around you and you continue to move forward.
But it's over 9,000.
Really? I would think that Dragon Ball would be the perfect story for an RPG. You have to go collect 9 balls. So you go to 9 different regions to explore and find where each ball is, and then you do a wish and you can make it whatever you want. It doesn't have to be saving the world. It could be like resurrecting a dead loved one or whatever. And that just seems like it's just begging for an RPG.
Action RPG, though.
Yeah,
which I think sort I have... Case sort of like a Diablo-type game.
I think I have the same issue with Dragon Ball Xenoverse that I have with, like, things like Sonic Forces, where in any place where you make sort of make a character and it's supposed to be like an avatar of you, but it just sort of is a canned response vessel to go through that world, and you don't really have any input into anything going on. You just sort of play through and do whatever anyone else tells you to do.
I would make it more like the Mario RPG, where you have the characters from the game that are your main characters, and not some Link. Yeah, like you said, some create your own character thing, because I think you would want to play Goku or Gohan or one of the other characters that I don't know, and then just go crazy with the abilities on many enemies,
as
not
one
just
piece.
One
he's in that world, isn't he? Oh, no, wait. How about Naruto? Oh, no, wait. How about Bleach? I can play Bleach, right? Oh, no, wait.
And that's what I'm saying, is that, like, I hope that that this new action RPG isn't just like Xenoverse 3. I hope it's something where they actually go with the characters and you get to play as them. Like, it would be cool as hell to me if you got to just, like, go straight from the very first part of Dragon Ball and journey with Bulma to collect the Dragon Balls as Goku as a kid. That would be fun. That would be fun as heck.
Are you guys looking forward to Jump Force?
Only so much. I think it's really interesting how much they're wedging into that game.
Yeah, I saw the updated character list, and they're just like, you know, it's just a matter of the creator saying, okay, you can use them.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, like, they're pulling from every, like, the most bizarre corners of the Shonen Jump universe. Rurouni Kenshin, Fist of the North Star, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure finally got in there. Who knew that in 2019 you'd be able to play a game where Goku and Jotaro Kujo and Kenshiro can all beat up Frieza in the same game?
That's crazy.
What have you been playing, TJ?
I was at PAX South this last weekend, so I've been I played a whole bunch of different things.
Before you say what you've been playing, are you going to SXSW?
I have no idea yet. I usually don't, just because it's so crowded up in Austin and it's kind of a hassle. It's fun. It's cool and all as far as the music festival goes, but I really don't have any enthusiasm for the game end of it. But I did get a good conference in this last weekend, and I'm not going to talk about everything I played, but there were two standouts that really – actually, there were three standouts that really, like –
Another Fist of the North Star game?
No, not quite. But it is a blast from the past. One of them is a blast from the past. I played the new ToeJam & Earl game.
Oh, okay.
Which is a almost one-to-one remake of the very first game that came out on Sega Genesis, where you're traveling around, you're walking around the level collecting items and trying to get ship parts.
Yeah, ToeJam & Earl back in the groove. Yeah,
and it's really cool. I like what they did with it. They took that world and they built it into like a sort of I forget what the name for the cell shaded animation, where it's 3D on the 2D plane, and they really did capture the feel, and they made a lot of the annoying things about the original game kind of seamless. Like if you in that game you take elevators up to higher levels. And if you fall off the edge of a level, you fall down to the level previous, and you have to get back to the elevator. And that used to be a huge loading screen. Like, it used to take a long time to load up the levels. This is like seamless. You fall off the level and you just fall right down onto the level below and keep going. And so it's kind of like it's taking that original style and putting it back together, but also getting rid of the restraints that they had back on the Sega Genesis, which is great.
It'll have 9 playable characters and a 4-up player co-op mode,
which it's like straight up jump in, jump out. You can jump right in with your friend wherever they are. And
does it have the funky music? Is the real question.
Absolutely, it has the funky music.
It would be a Broken Emerald game without it.
And it has all the creepy little enemies. The Cupid is by far the most freakish amalgam that they put together from the old games. It is nightmare fuel. I don't like it. But another one I played was called Eagle Island, which is going to be my Owl Boy of 2019. I'm on par for Owl based action platformer to have two favorite Owl based action platformers. This one was from Screenwave Media, and basically what it is it's a you play a human character that has an eagle friend that he can basically throw like a football at enemies to belt them with it, and he can also double jump off the eagle, and you can set up combos where, like, if you hit an enemy, then you can call the eagle back and throw him again immediately. So, and the more combo enemies you kill with in one combo, the more like jewels you get, which you can then use to buy perks, which allow you to do stuff like triple jumps or give your eagle like a flame attack or all sorts of things. And so it's going to have a story mode, but the mode I played was this thing that happens after the game is done, where it creates procedurally generated levels that just like basically creates randomized rooms based off of a number system that you put in. It's like a 6-digit number that just like creates a level. And it creates so much replayability where like you can just continue to challenge different levels over and over again. And then they have some standard ones where you can like speed run. And it was also beautiful and fun to watch and fun to play. And I could feel the skill cap. Like I figured I would fail one time, and then I figured out how to play better the next time. So it's going to be one to watch. Eagle Island from Screenwave Media. That was probably my favorite thing in PAX South. And I hope that it gets the love it deserves.
I agree. This looks like a beautiful game, TJ. I'm checking it out on Steam, and it looks like it's going to be on Switch and Steam. And the graphics kind of do remind me of Owlboy, so I can see why you said that. It's like that, just that nice classic old feel graphics.
Absolutely. And there are so many little perks in the game that you can get that change up the way you play. Like I said, the triple jump, there's like an explosion attack that you can equip the eagle with. There's one that makes enemies drop more gold, but they don't drop health after that. And so there you can equip 4 perks at a time, and there's just so many combinations you can do to like random and in the procedurally generated mode, it's random. You get a selection of perks as you go, and it's kind of a roll of the dice what you get. So it's kind of cool to see just like how things can change.
Okay, and you said it was the third game.
Yeah, I played a VR game this weekend.
Okay.
The reason why it caught my eyes was that it was put off as a virtual reality real-time strategy game. It's called Final Assault, and basically what it is you play basically a little military assault where each of you has a base on either side of the map. You have 2 lanes. And basically, you deploy units by plucking them off a clipboard and putting them down on the map, and either putting them in a lane where they'll automatically attack, or moving them around on various parts of the map by poking it. And it's literally like somebody gave you a Micro Machines toy box, and you just get to strategize with all your toys and put your tanks down and put your jeeps down and put your infantry down. And it was surprisingly fun. I have often been skeptical of the idea of competitive VR just because I haven't seen anyone really take it and go all in on it. But these guys are building this from the ground up to be a competitive game where you, like, you it's built to go head-to-head against somebody else and figure out, like, there's you can either be the American side or the German side, and they have different groups of soldiers, depending on what you pick, armored, air force, or infantry, and each has their own strengths or weaknesses. So it was really cool to see. It was really nice to see. Like, I love real-time strategy. I'm okay with VR, and the game put those two things together pretty properly and made it feel fun.
Okay. As for me, I played nothing, so there you go. I haven't played anything. So we're going to move straight to game news. Our first news item is exciting Halo, the Master Chief Collection news teased for SXXW 2019. This comes to us from Gematsu. 343 Industries has announced, quote, some exciting Halo, the Master Chief Collection news, unquote, during the Halo Championship Series Invitational at SXSW 2019. I really should call it South by Southwest, really. it's kind of saying SXSW is just kind of a mouth twister. If you're not able to make it to the event itself, be sure to tune into Mixer and Twitch each day at 12 p.m. Reads the Halo Waypoint news post. Not only will we be treated to amazing matches and gameplay, but we've also got some exciting Master Chief Collection news to reveal during the show. It's right now available for Xbox One, but I'm going to make two guesses of two things that they're going to announce. One, they're going to announce the Halo 3 remastered, which, you know, would make sense. And the other thing is I think they're just going to announce the PC version of the Halo Master Chief Collection. Because that's the direction Microsoft has been going. A lot of their stuff, you know, if you can get it on Xbox One, you'll be able to get it on PC. And Halo 6, Halo Infinite, which actually is Halo 6, is going to be on PC. So you'd think that, yeah, maybe they might want to bridge people, get PC users excited about Halo again.
Yeah, get everybody up to speed. That's interesting. Like, I hope you're right. I think to myself, like, did they ever put any other Halos on PC besides the first one, like, years later?
Halo 2 was extremely popular. It was also extremely controversial. Because remember, that was the one that forced you to have, what was the name of the Windows that everybody hated?
Oh, Windows Vista?
Yeah, it forced you to have Windows Vista. I got it because you could get achievements on the PC. But the multiplayer was just as dead on with PC players as it was on Xbox. They also had Halo Wars and Halo Wars 2 on PC, but no one cares. I mean, seriously, they only care about the shooters. And Halo 3 never made it to PC, nor did 4 or 5 or ODST. So yeah, I think it's a big deal that Microsoft might be bringing Halo back to PC.
Yeah, for sure. Like, obviously, it's a place where people will buy it, and if not more so than console. I mean, people will likely buy it on console, but...
The other thing is that, remember where they're announcing this. This is the Halo Championship Series Invitational. And consoles are one thing, but PC gamers are where all the esports are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even what's it called, fighters like Street Fighter V, you know, they'd rather have it on PC, played on PC, than they would on PlayStation.
You know, the only place where people don't do PC is Call of Duty. They still play on PS4, I believe. And most fighting games, actually, are still competed on PS4.
Yeah, but, you know, the Street Fighter games, I believe, they use on PC because it's just simply superior. And, you know, how Street Fighter players are, they know by the pixel.
Mm-hmm.
They're so exacting, and the PC version offers them the most exacting combat.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who would like a lot of fighting games to be like in official competitions, like Capcom Cup and stuff. I know they would like it to probably be on PC, but I think there's also the issue that a lot of fight sticks are built for either Xbox One and PC or PS3 and PS4.
Yeah. But getting back to Halo, I think a lot of Halo 6 is going to be the first Halo game on PC, Halo shooter that is, since 2007, for Halo 2. So, I think Microsoft might be trying to get them, and remember, Microsoft is trying to solidify PC as the personal computer platform. Even though I don't know anybody who'd rather play on Linux or Mac. and there are people who swear by Linux and people who swear by Mac, but Windows is the gaming choice right now on PC. But Microsoft wants to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Scott?
Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't want to keep it that way, so yeah. But Mac, there are game companies themselves trying to put games on Mac and Linux, like I know Obsidian did with Pillars, but I guess that'll be over now. They won't be doing that anymore.
Ironically, one of the best games out there, we discussed it last week, Oberdin, emulates being on Mac OS.
That's cool.
Yeah, if you ever play Oberdin, was it The Mystery of Oberdin, I think? Anyways, Oberdin, Lucas Pope made it exactly like how Mac OS games played. And I'm talking about the Mac OS as in the original Macintosh, with the black and white, not the Apple II GS or something like that. And it has that liney feel to it, like it's rendering line by line. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
EA cancels open-world Star Wars game from Kotaku. Electronic Arts has canceled its open-world Star Wars game, according to three people familiar with the goings-on at the company. The game, announced alongside the shutdown of Visceral Games back in 2017, had been in development at EA's office in Vancouver. EA Vancouver, a large studio that mostly handles support for a variety of the publisher's games, including FIFA and Battlefront, had been working on this open-world Star Wars game since October 2017, when EA closed Visceral Games. Until then, Visceral, best known for its popular Dead Space horror series, was developing its own Star Wars game. That project, codenamed Ragtag, was a linear action-adventure game directed by Uncharted director Amy Hennig. EA Vancouver had been assisting on the project, and when EA closed Visceral Games on October 17, 2017, the Vancouver studio took it over. But it wouldn't be accurate to say that EA Vancouver's Star Wars was the same game as Ragtag. When EA Vancouver took over, it rebooted the Star Wars project entirely, keeping some of the art assets, but transforming it into an open-world game. This project was codenamed Orca, which was very early in development, but would involve playing as a scoundrel or bounty hunter who could explore various open-world planets and work with different factions across the Star Wars universe. When EA's top decision-makers looked at their roadmap for the next years, they decided that they needed something earlier than the planned release date for Orca. According to two people familiar with what happened, they canceled... So they canceled Orca in favor of a smaller-scale Star Wars project that's now aimed for much sooner, likely late 2020, which also happens to be around the same time that next-gen consoles will supposedly launch. The publisher did not lay anyone off as a part of this transition. The news comes at a time of cost-cutting across the industry, as major publishers, including EA and Activision, as we've reported. Some at the studio also hope that Orca might be restarted after this new project is finished. The day after the publication of the story,
I think they mean that Ragtag might be restarted.
Hmm.
Because it's Orca that... Oh, no, they did cancel Orca. I'm sorry.
Yeah. EA sent the day after the publication of the story, EA sent over the following statement. There's been speculation overnight about one of our Star Wars projects. As a natural part of the creative process, the great work by our team in Vancouver continues and will evolve into future Star Wars content and games. We're fully committed to making more Star Wars games. We're very excited about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order from Respawn, and we'll share more about our new projects when the time is right.
By the way, for those who don't know, Respawn are what used to be Infinity Ward, and they're the ones who are responsible for Titanfall. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that might be a game to really look forward to.
Yeah, but this is still a bummer. That means that Visceral Games died for nothing.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's like a rock group, you know? Rock groups live and die. And at least with the... there was no firing with this game. They just thought, you know, it's taking too long. So let's make something that's quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it sounds... I mean, if they do go back to it, that'd be kind of neat. But I'm curious about, like... What does it mean that they're trying to basically rush a project out by 2020? Well, maybe not rush.
Rushing. But... I mean, that's still two years of development time. I mean, mm-hmm. a good dev time is about 18 months, so it's kind of on schedule.
Yeah, I wonder what it's going to be though if it's not Orca. Like, what is that?
I'm going to tell you something. I'm glad there's no open world game coming out because I'm getting sick of open world games. To tell you the truth, we don't need another Watch Dogs set in Star Wars universe. We don't need another Grand Theft Auto. I'd rather have a nice linear plot, you know.
Everybody would cheer if BioWare got their hands on Star Wars again.
They're working on Anthem. Have you seen the first dev diary for Anthem?
Yeah. Yes, I've followed the goings on with Anthem, and it's exciting, but it looks pretty.
So let's just say that. The only thing about that is two things. One, BioWare has never really been able to do combat well. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually get to do it. And we've already seen The Division and Destiny and all these other similar games. And, you know, I want to see something that's going to make it interesting. You know, here's a little dirty little fact. You know, shooters don't make good RPGs. I don't mean first-person, you know, RPGs like Deus Ex. I mean games that are shooters like Borderlands, you know. To me, they don't make good, because there's just so many ways you can level up your ability to shoot.
I feel like Anthem...
I thought Parasite Eve was a good shooting game, because that was RPG, and it also featured guns
but
heavily.
Usually you have to gimp the player's ability to do third-person shooting in order to make them level up to something.
Yeah.
So you have the gun wavering around like you're drunk.
See, and Parasite Eve 2, it's not really a shooter so much as it is an RPG that just happens to have guns. It's still a turn-based combat
like Deus
system.
Ex.
It was.
And even in Deus Ex, the shooting was kind of eh.
I would say more like Fallout 3 if you only used VATS all the time.
So they just canceled this one project, but they're still... EA is still going to do a Star Wars game. It just won't be open world. I would like a Star Wars RPG.
And yeah, like, I mean, that's, you know, but here's the thing. What I want is Knights of the Old Republic number 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yes, I know Star Wars The Old Republic was supposed to be 3 through 9 or whatever that was. And here's the thing. I really enjoyed being an Inquisitor. Not an Inquisitor. The Agent, the Imperial Agent. The story for the Imperial Agent was fantastic. But on the other hand, you know, I'd rather just have a single-player RPG in the Star Wars universe or Star Trek universe.
Yeah, that would be good. That's another fandom that I think it translates well to an RPG. The elements, you have a Jedi and you level up as a Jedi. You gain abilities and you gain wisdom and all this other stuff, and you have duality of different abilities being Sith versus Jedi, and you have a whole bunch of worlds and aliens.
But here's the thing. You know what? Star Trek Online is still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game that, you know, that you wouldn't think, because Star Trek is always about doing the missions, and missions aren't always about combat, but the world is so huge that they actually make it work.
Yes.
And also, it's a good way to get away from the stupid Kelvin timeline.
Yeah, and they add content to that game pretty frequently that's like stuff people are looking for, like legacy ships and stuff like that, but also some new stuff, I do believe.
And also, I don't know if you read about this, but there's very depressing news. Everything I read about Alex Kurtzman talking about how he never really liked Star Trek. He grew up with Star Wars. And my thinking is, good job, you just put someone in charge of Star Trek Discovery who doesn't like Star Trek. Which is why you have the Red Queen and prophecies and religious bullshit. That was never Star Trek. just, you know, here's the, people who like Star Trek aren't going to go to Star Trek wanting Star Wars.
That's true.
And I will. And people who don't know anything about Star Trek aren't going to watch a Star Trek show.
Yeah.
Stop. Just make a nice little show with a low budget for the Star Trek fans, which involves happy, you know, here's the thing that a lot of people have a problem with Star Trek, you know, Discovery, including me. Remember when Star Trek was all about optimism about the future?
Mm-hmm.
What is Star Trek Discovery? Oh no, the world's coming to an end and war and the Klingons are attacking and, you know, and the Red Queen is going to destroy the galaxy. That's not Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole thing, wasn't the entire thing from, like, always supposed to be pretty much exploration in a time and human era where currency doesn't exist and simply, and there's a lot of philosophy as to
exist on Earth, but you have to have some sort of standardized monetization for the entire galaxy, which is why they came up with gold-pressed latinum.
But it's a constant, like, question.
Yeah, I know.
Of,
I mean, Earth has
philosophically no sense. I mean, of humans' place in the galaxy where they are not alone.
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's like with Time's Arrow, and Troy says to Mark Twain, hey, guess what? You know, we don't have oppression. We don't have poverty. We don't have starvation, you know, all that stuff. And Mark Twain's response is, well, maybe it was worth giving up a cigar for.
Hmm.
That's still one of my favorite episodes, Times. I know a lot of people don't like Time's Arrow, but I do.
I like Time's Arrow. That is a good two-parter.
I mean, yeah, it can be a little hokey at times, but I still liked it. Actually, yeah. It always gave me the impression of being a three-part episode smushed down to two parts.
You know, getting back to the Star Wars thing, though. Before we go off into an hour-long Star Trek tangent.
We're not going to get into an hour-long Star Trek. This isn't Red Letter Media.
So one of the things that me and my buddy were talking about recently is that EA's stocks have been on the downslide since E3. They've been kind of hitting an all-time low, and I think some of it was in response to just like they didn't have a very good E3. Really,
I mean, here's the thing.
When you think about it, all the real stuff they had coming out of E3 was Anthem, which we already knew about, and Battlefield 5, which people were pretty split on.
But here's the thing. You know, they will always have Madden. They'll always have FIFA. They'll always have their tent poles that they can rely on. And
sure.
Those are usually released during the winter and the fall.
Sure. But I do have to wonder what happens if Anthem doesn't do as well as they want
you know,
it to.
Here's the thing. I don't think Anthem will fail because it'll be a Rainbow Six Siege situation with Ubisoft. Ubisoft was not going to let Siege fail, period. End of story.
Is there any situation where Disney would take the video game rights of Star Wars away from
EA?
Well,
here's the thing. A lot of people are talking about this and that, you know, how it's all EA's fault. They seem to forget that Disney is the one who tells EA what can and cannot be in the games.
Yeah, that's a similar thing with like Marvel and Capcom. They were very specific about like what Capcom could do with the Marvel characters in the Marvel Versus series, which is why Marvel Versus Capcom Infinite and a lot of people believe that there was
a lot of people hated it. Yeah,
a lot of people believe that corporate basically meddling by Marvel was what caused a lot of the issues.
Well, gee, you know, I think the X-Men and the Fantastic Four might have a little place in Marvel, don't you?
Yeah, everybody.
And you take those characters out.
After how much people loved Gambit and Wolverine in every Marvel game leading up to that, it was ridiculous to see a Marvel game that didn't have any X-Men in it.
And you know who else is a Fantastic Four character? Galactus. And you don't have a Galactus game in a Marvel vs. Capcom game, you might as well not have one. You have to have Galactus coming in and just, I'm going to hit you once and you're going to die.
You got to have the big bad. Like, in the first one, it was Apocalypse, and the second one is Magneto merged with something, and,
Magneto, Master of Magnets.
Uh-huh. And then they upped the ante with Galactus. But, like...
Yeah, but just having Galactus loom over the field and just go, excuse me, slap.
But, like, in Infinite, what, you have...
Yeah, people were looking at the Infinite roster and the Injustice 2 roster.
Well, they took they took the Infinite roster and made it like a third of any other roster. They made it about the size of the first roster, which, quite frankly, after having Marvel vs. Capcom 2 and Marvel vs. Capcom 3, is unacceptable.
Well, here's the thing. At least it seems like the X-Men and the Fantastic Four are slowly being folded back into Marvel, you know, not the cinematic, but just comics, because Disney doesn't seem to understand, you know, when you're going to wreck your... Don't wreck your house, you know? Don't kill off all the X-Men, and don't kill off the Fantastic Four, because at some point they're going to belong to you again, but what's going to be left, you know?
Yeah. So I would agree with Scott. I would say that
respect.
I would say that executive meddling is definitely a thing. I don't think that Disney is going to take the rights away from EA, so to speak, yet. There's nothing to indicate
it's
not, that.
No, it isn't that. It's just that, well, Disney's busy running Star Wars into the ground anyway. So, I mean, just like CBS is running Star Trek into the ground.
Well, I'm just saying more along the lines of they are most definitely involved in making their presence felt when they, when you see certain decisions coming out.
And here's the thing. EA has to say, okay, well, you know, you own the license. We just have, we're just borrowing it for a while.
Yeah.
But like I said, when you have a game by Respawn, you know, at least you have to think it's going to be at the worst good. Because Respawn takes their shit seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and I'm going to love to hear Scott's opinion on this. Go ahead, Scott.
Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire is getting turn-based combat later this week. This is from PC Gamer. Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire features real-time, pausable combat, but some RPG enthusiasts maintain a preference for turn-based battles. A free update coming later this week will give them that option. Gaming director Josh Sawyer said in a video posted by Shock News that the idea for a turn-based mode came from the system designer Nick Carver, who worked with the programmer Brian McIntosh to make it happen. He also emphasized that the mode changes the game dramatically for people who aren't quite as enthusiastic about the pacing of real-time with pause combat system. The turn-based mode will be part of the upcoming 4.1 patch and will initially be a beta so Obsidian can collect feedback and tune it up as required. You'll need to start a new game if you want to try it, and you will not be able to switch back and forth between real-time and pause turn-based. The new mode will very fundamentally change the way Pillars of Eternity 2 plays, Sawyer said, so you'll choose one or the other at the beginning of the game and then stick to it with the duration. The turn-based combat option is slated to come to Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire, January 24th. And I want to know why the hell I didn't get an update about this, and I had to find out here. I mean, what the heck? Anyways,
You know, Chris Capella, Game Watcher, is going to be writing review of the turn-based version of. That's how big a change, you know, a change this is.
Oh yeah, it's huge, because even when you have that possibility, you still might miss your turn, so to speak. You know, because everything's moving, everything's fluid, and so you might have like a few precious seconds where your character doesn't have a command or isn't doing the command you want them to do, and they might get into a middle of an action. You're like, no, I don't want that, and now they're, you know, doing something you don't want them to. And with turn-based, you have that agency, you have that ability to say, this is what I want you to do, and everything is in a nice, orderly fashion, and I do enjoy turn-based, and
I haven't checked the video, if it's I go, you go, or we go.
I think it's on an initiative, so, you know, if you have first initiative, then your character, one goes.
So it goes by character, by character, okay.
Yeah, by character, yes. Right. And I don't know if, like, there'll be tiles, like, you'll see a grid, possibly, and, you know,
some games have that thing in which they show sort of like a border around them, not even tiles, just a round border.
Yeah.
And, you know, you given a certain amount of action points and, you know, you can use that to attack or whatever. You know, this is not Dungeons and Dragons, so you don't have actions, you know. It's similar, but not exactly.
Right. So, yes, this will be very interesting. I'm intrigued to see this, and so I guess I'll wait to start my new game until I have this option, because I definitely want to try the turn-based, and that'll probably make the game feel so different.
When I look at this and I think of Obsidian and turn-based, the thing that immediately comes to mind is Fallout 1 and 2.
Oh, yes.
Which I can imagine that it's going to be quite a bit more refined than that. Just because if you go back to those things, they haven't I'm talking more about the function than all of the form.
Right.
Well, actually, vice versa. Form, but not the function, because the function is dated and old and slow. But I do like the idea of being able to apply after so long. It's been so long since Obsidian has done something like that.
I was about to say, the mix of turn-based and real-time, or pausable real-time, goes all the way back to Baldur's Gate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, that was an innovation at the time. We're not going to do turn-based. We're going to do pausable real-time.
Yeah, I think it was a nice compromise for people who wanted more action in the games and to feel more, more impending tension that they had to.
Well, yeah, when you have pausable real-time, basically you have to keep an eye on everything at once.
Right, you do.
But, some people just like the old, okay, I'm going to attack now, and this is what I want to do. I don't have to worry about people moving as I move.
I'm not a huge fan of pausable real-time, to be honest.
I'm okay with it in certain situations. I mean, I was okay with it in KOTOR.
I think it starts feeling jarring when you hit pause, and it's in the middle of someone's battle cry or sound effects, and all the sounds just stop as you pick up what you want to do, and then they start up again. And it's just so weird, because my wife was hearing it, and she thought something was wrong with my game, because she's like, the sounds keep stopping and starting. What's going on? And
it's like, no, that's Half-Life, dear.
That's just the nature of pausing during an action, and it will be so nice just to be turn-based. And I feel like, TJ, it's been so long since I played turn-based RPG fantasy. It just feels like forever.
Yeah, and I think for me, it was more along the lines of I'm such a micromanager, and I know a lot of other people are with these games too. So like when I'm in combat in a game like Pillars of Eternity, it's straight up like I pause it, I give an action to everybody, and I'm like thinking to myself, okay, have I gotten everything? Have I considered everything? Okay, let's go. And then I let that one action, that one set of actions play out, and I'm like, okay, pause. Okay, next thing. And yeah. It's just like it feels. It's less like real time to me and more like just like a jarring stop and go.
Yes. Jarring stop and go is a perfect phrase for how it feels.
I mean, in some games it makes perfect sense, like FTL. I mean, you can't do turn-based with FTL, but it's still a very strategic game. RPGs, I run hot and cold on it.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people preferred to do it that way with like games like the Dragon Age Inquisition. No, not Dragon Age Inquisition.
I don't know if I could do, strict turn-based with something like KOTOR, But when you're dealing with an AD&D type game, and I think a lot of people tend to... The only problem I have is I still remember those gold box days in which... Oh God!
I miss those games.
There's 50 kobolds that have to sit there and wait for a couple of minutes as each kobold moves.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
That's what fireballs are for.
I really do like the idea of Obsidian going. I really do like the idea of Obsidian experimenting with a turn-based setup again, because it's nice to look at. It's a nice thought to be able to play one of their games and. Think that instead of like being in a situation where I'm going to have to like sit on that pause button and mash the hell out of it when I'm ready, I can just like sit. I can just like think and strategize and treat it like a really exotic chess match.
Say what you want about Civilization. It's nice to be able to get up, go to the bathroom, check mail, come back. And the game hasn't started without you. You're still doing what you want, there is something to be said about pure turn-based.
Yeah, so I think for That's actually a reason why I might jump in. I haven't jumped into Deadfire yet, but I might. I would go in there.
We have someone who owns Deadfire, and he can tell us what it's like to play turn-based in that game.
But I wanted to discover for myself.
Yes, but Scott can tell us first. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is coming out, and this podcast will be coming out the same day as the update. So next week, maybe if Scott can pull himself away from Ni No Kuni 2, he can tell us what the turn-based combat is like in Deadfire.
Yeah, I will do that when it comes out. So yeah, I'm gonna get the beta and check that out, and I'll also check out the DLC at the same time. So that'll be really cool. Take a nice little break from the Ni No Kuni, and I did want to say, TJ, that I think you'll enjoy the kingdom building that you get to do in Ni No Kuni. It is a lot like
2, not Ni No Kuni.
Yeah, 2. That's right, because it's not in the first one.
No, that one's just about you having to deal with the fact you killed your mother.
Oh, anyway, so
Ni No Kuni 2 is. The first Ni No Kuni was about. Gosh darn it! It was about you killing your own mother.
Is that the White Witch was?
Yeah.
I don't think I got that far.
That was part of the story in which the entire reason why you're in that fantasy world is because he killed your mom.
Mm.
By accident, but you still killed her.
Okay.
And then she resurrects at the end. Spoiler! Okay. That's why it's good that Ni No Kuni 2 has nothing to do with the first game.
Other than it being in the same world.
Yeah, but that's just, it's sort of like remember about Super Mario World 2 was not really that. It was a different game with different licensed characters. But they didn't want to bring Super Mario Brothers 2 Japanese to America, so they just reskinned that game and called it Super Mario World 2. Here, that's basically what's going on with Ni No Kuni and Ni No Kuni 2. I'm willing to bet you anything that Ni No Kuni 2 was a different game, and they just slapped the Ni No Kuni stuff on it.
No, it's not just slapped on. They have Ding Dong Dells there. That's the previous kingdom. They've made mentions of previous.
Yeah, that's like.
Jonah, they gave a huge story, and I've been playing the game. You haven't, and I've been in that story, and they've explained what's happened to the world. It has gone through a catalytic change, and it is the same world. It's just very, very different.
I didn't say it
wasn't
the same world. I'm saying it's just. It was
acting like they did a different game that just slapped the name on it. It's not a reskinning. It's a totally.
They're just different games.
Yeah, they're different games, and they obviously want to go a different direction, and that's fine. But that doesn't make it a reskinning of a different game or some other game. I just this is still Ni No Kuni. It's just a different RPG style.
Yeah.
It's still JRPG.
I mean, you only need to look at it and realize it's by the same people. It's got that.
Yeah,
it's by the same people. Studio Ghibli.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyways. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. I think the question of the week should be. What is your favorite turn-based game? Strictly.
Oh my god, that's so easy. It's Shining Force.
Okay.
Shining Force on the original Genesis is like where fantasy fiction love started for me. Like if it wasn't for that game, that game got me super into the idea of like elves and dwarves and centaurs and all that shit and got me like I wanted to create those worlds on my own and I started writing like little fantasy stories after the fact because that game was so fun and so inspirational to me.
Wow, TJ the fanfic writer.
No, I made my own stuff.
It wasn't self-insert fanfic, was it?
Nope.
How about you, Alpha?
I would say Suikoden is my favorite turn-based RPG. I loved building an army.
We can split this into RPG and regular strategy.
Yeah.
But Suikoden, okay.
Yeah, it was turn-based. You had your army battles, and you had your one-on-one little battles, and then, of course, you had your duels, and you had your castle building, and your rich story, and this even richer world that where each game takes place in a different part of that world. So I really just thoroughly enjoyed that series.
Well, if I'm going to talk about turn-based RPG, then it would be Ultima 4. If I was talking about just turn-based period, it would have to be Civilization.
Mm-hmm.
The entire series.
I was thinking it would need to be like RPG strategy. That's what I was thinking when I thought turn-based.
I'm wondering if anybody would have. I'm really pretty sure one person out there, if they respond to us, will probably bring up Final Fantasy Tactics.
Of course, that's an awesome one.
For that matter, Advance War, which was my favorite strategy handheld game.
Advance War: Days of Ruin is something I keep in my Windows Media Player on the reg while I work. The soundtrack from that game is ridiculously good.
Okay, well, we will see you guys next week. Don't forget to answer the question of the week. You can find me at Twitter, at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. And finally, we're doing podcasts from my home in New York.
Yay!
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.